a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
On a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the MDN studios, Sam Webb and Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass before we get to the MGO Blog Roundtable. I'll tell you about the great deals to be had down in suburban Chevrolet Cadillac in Ann Arbor. Have the best sales selection and service around. If you can't make it down to check out the great inventory, it's just the largest around the corner of Jackson and Wagner Roads in Ann Arbor, 3515 Jackson Road to be exact. All you have to do is go to their website at suburbanannarbor.com, click that specials tab, and up they come, the great lease deals like the one on the 2017 Chevy Malibu LT demo. You can lease one right now for $129 per month with $995 down or sign and drive for $230 per month. You want to get green. The 2017 Chevy Volt, you can lease one right now for $229 per month with $995 down or sign and drive for $299 per month. Maybe you want to get sporty. You can lease a 2017 Chevy Camaro LT for $259 per month with $995 down or sign and drive for $319 per month. And last but certainly not least, didn't forget about you truck guys, the 2017 Chevy Silverado four-wheel drive double cab. You can lease one right now for $229 per month. With $995 down or sign and drive for $329 per month for 27 months for those. And other great lease deals. Get on down to suburban Chevrolet Cadillac in Ann Arbor and make the choice. And with that, I want to welcome in the crew, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew first, starting off with the guy from MGO Blog himself, Brian Cook. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, man, I'm feeling much better. We're a week removed from signing day as opposed to a day removed. So gotten a little bit of energy back. Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how are you doing?
I'm great, Sam. I'm glad you got some rest.
Yes, sir. And, of course, on the phones from Hawaii, where he is basking in the sun, not at this moment, but, you know, day in and day out he is, Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing this morning?
How you doing, guys? Hey, could we start just for a second with a little bit of women's basketball?
Sure.
I keep wanting, you know, people may not recognize that this is probably the best team that Michigan's ever had. They're 20-5 right now, 9-2 in the Big Ten. They've got three, I would say, of the best, certainly conservatively, 10 players they've ever had in the program. And they've got a woman who plays, who's kind of a key to me when I look at basketball teams, Jillian Dunstan, who doesn't score a lot, but I think this week she had 15 rebounds and a big win at Mackey against Purdue. Dunstan is the kind of player who doesn't demand the ball, but she just does so much right that she makes she's the grease in the system.
She's the junkyard and dog. Just for that beeline with is clamoring for on his team.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, she's the kind of player that you need to have to make everything else go. And they've got wonderful shooters. They've cut their bench down. Barnes & Rico's playing with five or six players. They have a nice utility player in Nicole Munger who can play sort of inside or out. And they're just going with 5.5, 6, and it's working really well. And they play it. I mean, she's done just a great job. And I would really encourage people to go down and see this team play. I mean, a good crowd really helps. I think they have a chance to win 30 games this year.
Yeah, so you know, we obviously follow them very closely here, and we could see before the season that this team had a chance to be special because of its versatility. Caitlin Flaherty as a junior is an outstanding scorer, one of the best guards in the country. You saw Hallie Thom come in as a freshman and really be a go-to player in the post. But you add Kaiser Gondrzek, and this is an example of a player who had all of the press clippings, all of the high ratings. And Craig, you know this, if you're following them, she has absolutely lived up to the billing, and she did it again yesterday. 25 points on 9-for-13 shooting. You know, she can shoot it from distance. She can dish it, as she's putting up really good assist numbers and is spelling. You know, Sierra Thompson at the point guard spot. She is big time.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think she has a good chance to be the best player who's ever played at Michigan, and I'll be surprised if she isn't. But people should go out and watch. It's cheap to get a ticket. They're fun to watch. They're well coached. And they're, like I say, they're a top 25 team right now. I think they're number 21. Mm-hmm. And my guess is they're a top 15 or so team in the country. They're not going to win the national championship, but they could certainly find themselves in the final 16 easily.
There are three home games remaining. This coming Sunday at 2:00 is the Pink game against Wisconsin. The following Sunday is the game at 2:00 against Michigan State. And they're trying to set the record for women's basketball attendance at Chrysler. So mark your calendars for a 2:00 game, Michigan versus Michigan State. Let's beat Michigan State in everything. And let's set a record crowd. That's February the 19th. And I was talking about this earlier, Craig, with Sam, that if they can find a way to continue the way they're playing, so you have to win your last five games in the regular season, everyone that they're playing is below them in the standings. If they can find a way to pull off some upsets in the Big Ten tournament, they can find a way into the top 16 seeds in the NCAA tournament and actually end up with home games here. It's going to take a little work because right now in bracketology they're a sixth seed, but if they can upset Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament, they might be able to move up enough seed lines to get to a four seed and actually host games here, which would be even more remarkable. I think they'll still be in that 5-6 range, but they have a shot to move up maybe two lines, which would be pretty darn cool to have home NCAA tournament games here for a couple of rounds too.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see that the minutes massaging that Kim is doing, because there's some games, like if you just looked at the box score from the last game, you would say, hey, she just doesn't play very many players. You know, she doesn't go to her bench very much. Some games she'll play Danielle Williams and Kayla Robbins more.
But she uses
yesterday it wasn't.
Yeah, she uses those breaks between quarters and the guaranteed timeouts that halfway through each half, through each quarter. She gets her players on the bench for right before it, and they come back off right after. So it might be a minute of rest, but it's like 5 minutes of real time.
Right. And so, you know, they don't play again until Sunday, so she could push it a bit with the minutes, but that'll be one of the interesting things to see. She does have a couple of more players that she utilizes. And then, I mean, we don't know. At one point, we were thinking that they were going to have Abby Cole, and they still may before the season goes on. But clearly, things haven't come along as quickly as they thought they would on that front. But, Craig, if they can get that, a 6'5 player off the bench to give them some defense, shot blocking, and five more fouls, I mean, that's a big deal if they can get it even this late in the season.
Yeah, I agree. And the program's in good shape, too. I think they've recruited pretty well. They've got Gondrzak and Flaherty and Tome coming back next year. So they have a good core. Like you say, that junkyard dog is important. But the program is in the best shape it's ever been. And this is a program that, of course, was neglected for many years by athletic directors who didn't care about women's sports. Bill Martin did give him major credit there, but it's really exciting for me, at least, as a person who really likes women's sports, to see how well they're doing, and especially this program that's had such a, you know, shaky history, let me put it that way.
Yeah, they're balling, and recruiting continues to get better every year, which we can let's try to make a rough segue over to the men's side of things, because something to be happy about if you're a Michigan fan this week with the way they played against Michigan State. I joke, guys, I don't think there's been a game in the Beilein era where they've had four shot clock violations forced in one game. Has to be a record in the Beilein era. They played as good defense as they played all season with the steal numbers. Not good field goal percentage defense, but as far as turning Michigan State over, they did that at a high clip. And then their effectiveness, guys, their determination and then effectiveness getting to the rim. I thought everything offensively came off of that.
It was strange because you watched the game a week ago and it doesn't look like the same game at all.
Right.
It's like Michigan, they go to Breslin and they do the thing where they're just jacking up threes because they can't get inside the three-point line until there's 10 seconds left on the clock. And obviously that was not the case this time around. It's a very strange game sometimes, basketball is. But back to the shot clock violations, you know, one thing that really leapt out at me is it's kind of early in the game. and there's like 8 seconds left on the shot clock for Michigan State, and they're trying to get it to their point guard, and Derek Walton is coming over like one of those dribble handoffs and preventing a dribble handoff. And that results in a shot clock violation because they've got 5 seconds left and they're just getting it to their point guard almost at the half court stripe. And that's not something I've seen from a Beilein defense in a long time, if ever. Mm-hmm. If I did see it before, it was Mitch McGarry doing it. So it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Walton had another great game. Walton's just taken off, become the guy that we all thought he might be when he was a freshman, right, winning games against Michigan State, winning games against Nebraska with drives to the hoop. And
played well against Ohio State.
Ohio State game was awesome.
So he's
still love that game.
He's really taking the bull by the horns. And let's give some credit to Zach Ervin for not shooting. Like, that's not a joke.
No, but Brian, not just the shooting.
I'm not laughing.
It's less dribbling.
I'm laughing because so many people have said that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm laughing.
I mean, he took one terrible shot early in that game, and I'm like, here we go again. And he was 1 for 3 for the game. And if it's not there and he's just playing good defense and getting some rebounds, that's fine because other people are scoring.
Yeah, so you guys remember when they were up in East Lansing and they went to the backcourt of X and Dare for like a minute. It wasn't, they didn't stick with it. They clearly didn't have the kind of faith in him. And at that point and after the game, I remember having a discussion that week. I mean, they're going to have to get more out of this guy. First of all, the minutes that you're playing Derek. Second of all, with Derek's ability to play off the ball, how is he going to do it if you aren't playing more X? So this was the game where they did it. And I thought that stretch, there was a 4-minute stretch toward the end of the first half where they were on the court together. And that was the stretch where they expanded the lead from 4 points to 16 and Michigan never looked back.
And apparently Saidi Washington was advocating that X get more playing time, and they cut down the offense to facilitate that. So, you know, it's very difficult for first-year players, especially point guards under Beilein, to have an impact because it's just a very complicated offense. And kind of giving him a dumbed-down version of it, you actually saw him become assertive. He had that little floater in the lane. He was driving. He was kicking. He looked like the player who was the Ohio Player of the Year last year, mm-hmm, which we hadn't seen so far. So that was a very encouraging development.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the whole team played loose. Like they were, you know, they played like they didn't have a care in the world, and they played really well because of that. There wasn't any kind of stiffness
You know what I'm going to say?
What?
Because people were tweeting it at me. You saw a couple of things. You saw Mo Bimo. And he is, from a temperament standpoint, everything I thought he would be and everything I think this team needs more of. He just has to be able to stay on the floor. That's been his big issue, not being able to stay on the floor. He was able to do it in this game. But DJ Wilson, when he gets that tech, there are some people, you can't do that. I get it.
Yeah, you can.
I get where you're coming from. But to me, there are some techs that you say, all right, they're more acceptable than others. And for that kid in that situation and for this team, I was okay with it. Totally okay with it. Don't make a habit of it. But, man. They need more of that. And I felt like Beilein felt the same way after the game. Clearly he's like, hey, you can't yell in people's faces. But it sounded like he was looking at his coaches like, that's some of what we need.
If I could get up that high, I'd be yelling in people's faces, man, for sure. I thought this game was interesting in terms of what it says about Michigan State, too. So when we went up to East Lansing and really had an awful game, couldn't shoot, turned the ball over, Zach Ervin was sick. Had a terrible game, and they were in that game. And kind of before that game, I was telling, I just kind of thought Michigan State would get it together, and they'd, you know, be their typical selves. You know, that team is they're not right.
Well, no, they got one guy taller than 6'6" on that team, like
who's good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but he's also a freshman who has trouble staying on the floor. They're playing a 6'6" walk on at center a lot. I don't think it's totally surprising when you look at their personnel that they're a 14-10 team. What's surprising to me is that people are still projecting them in the frickin' tournament at 14-10 with one good win. They have a win over Wichita State. Good win.
That's blind deference to Izzo.
Not playing. I mean, it's got to be because, I mean, they lost to, like, what, Long Beach State or something? I don't remember who it was.
Well, I mean, they also have, like, probably a lottery pick on that team.
Well, yeah.
It's been there for the second half of the season.
So did LSU last year.
Well, that says probably more about the lottery pick than it does about LSU, honestly.
So, I mean, I thought Michigan, like, before the Michigan State game, they were, like, a next four out kind of team. That felt fair to me. So how the heck is the Michigan State with the same frickin' record projected in the tournament by a bunch of people?
That's mystifying. They've lost 5 of their last 8. They lost to Northeastern.
They have two horrible, horrible losses. And
yeah,
they
got
one good win.
And they lost by 29 to us, which is, you know, I mean, I think you look at the quality of the losses also. I mean, in my mind, when you're evaluating.
Quality losses are not a thing.
Well,
you never see
they
a
may not be for anybody else.
But this is part of the problem with the selection committee. I mean, they're doing this RPI thing that does not. There is such a thing as a quality loss. I mean, if you
I'm sure their RPI is going to give them an argument. But when you actually look at their resume, like, I mean, come on.
Just remember who the head of the selection committee is.
Who's the head of the selection committee?
Mark Hollis.
Am I supposed to go?
I don't know. His attention is going.
I mean,
be
he's the athletic director of Michigan State, and he's running the committee. There's your deference to Michigan State.
I don't think that's the way it works.
Aren't they supposed to walk out?
Yourself.
It's not when they're discussing that team.
Because they don't know who walked out of the room. Come on.
So when we come back on the other side. It's a total crapshoot as far as what Michigan team is going to come out.
Yes.
You hope that they can bottle what we just saw and feeling a lot more optimistic about their ability to dial something up. But it's on the road in Bloomington. So we'll get into that and we'll get into Michigan down the stretch and how much of a chance you give them in these resume building games. They got to get some of these if they're going to make it.
It's true.
So we'll get to that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. And so do I. Golden Limousine is the only choice for corporate luxury and turnkey airport transportation services for your next trip. Whether it be an Ann Arbor arrival, a game day departure, a meeting across town, international business, your wife needs to go to the hospital to deliver a baby, Steve Clark. Call goldenlimo.com. Call Golden Limo or log on to goldenlimo.com. That's a true story, by the way. Steve Clark.
I wish I had thought of that, honestly.
Steve Clark did call Golden Limo to pick up his wife to take her to the hospital to deliver. I don't know which kid. Ira, do you know which kid?
The young girl.
Okay.
Was this like a scheduled inducement?
Yes.
Or okay.
And he called her a limo. Now, hey, they don't just have limos. It's luxury car service. They have SUVs. If you need a party bus, Golden has you covered there. And the great thing about Golden is it's a local company and the dollars stay local. When you spend with some of these other businesses, where does the money go? This is a way to keep it here. They reinvest in the community. They give back to the community as well. That's what you get with Golden Limousine. From the boardroom to the big house, Michigan. Rides on Golden. Log on to goldenlimo.com. It is 9:32 on a Thursday. So, guys, we've had this exercise with Michigan basketball for the last couple of weeks, it seems, because they lose and we think, all right, well, you know, it doesn't look good for this team. They win. We think, okay, well, now how does it look for this team? And we find ourselves in that situation again because here they are. They blow Michigan State out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not close. They play some semblance of defense in this game, turning them over. You saw them effectively get to the rim. You saw a contribution from Xavier Simpson. You see Derek continue to be, not only be a model of consistency for them, but also you're starting to see and hear the leadership qualities necessary for this team maybe to play better. He said, hey, you know, it's one thing to go out there and play well and lead the team that way. He said, now I got to start getting on some guys. And maybe that'll be something that pulls it out. But is it too late?
Well, I mean, so we haven't talked about the Ohio State game. I mean, I know the Michigan State game's fresh in our mind, but unfortunately, I went back and caught up with the Ohio State game last night. And
it's bad.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
it's a bad loss, I should say.
You know, I look at offensive defensive rebounding based on rebounding rates. And, you know, I mean, they're 99th in defensive rebounding rate, which is not characteristic of a Beeline team. All of his good teams have been pretty good defensive rebounding. Obviously, that game against Ohio State.
So, give me what do the numbers say as far as pretty good? We're ranked.
Well, I mean,
where
it's
exactly?
You know, it's 1 out of 351, right? So, like last year, they were 43rd, for example, which is good. I mean, you don't have to be first in the nation in defensive rebounding.
Just yeah, but if you're a Power 5 team, you want to be top 50
at least. Yeah, yeah, and especially that's something that you know Beeline has emphasized over the years. You know, I think that's something that'll come with coaching. You know, we'll see these big guys get better at that next year.
They were not present on the glass against Ohio State. And so that's why it was good to see. Granted, they had a size advantage versus Michigan State. They out-rebounded Michigan State in East Lansing. So it wasn't totally you know, out of the realm of possibility when you said, hey, out-rebound Michigan State. That was one of the things that Terry Mills said heading into the game is one of the keys, out-rebound Michigan State. Well, they had done it already, but right. on the heels of what happened against Ohio State, there were some people kind of like, I don't know, your two bigs combined for two rebounds in that game total.
Yeah, I think that's why we saw some John Teske against Michigan State. Like, yeah. because he's 7'2", he's enormous, he had a really good rebound in garbage time that was an impressive grab for him. And even if he doesn't know the offense, like, given the fact that your backup center isn't giving you anything on either end of the floor, I think you got to explore what he is able to do with the ball, with the ball when it's coming off the backboard.
And maybe that's one of the takeaways from this game, Craig, because much of the focus was on them playing X more. But Brian is right. They played Teske more. Maybe that'll be one of the differences down the stretch. They're just going to play their young fella. They're going to play their young guys more and just, you know, live with whatever downs that might come with the ups.
About Teske, we just haven't seen enough of him to know. You know, one thing that Brian said earlier resonated more with me, and that's about Zach Ervin. I mean, I think, and as I mentioned Ray Dunston earlier on, I think with any team that's going to play near its potential, there has to be one guy on the floor who doesn't demand the ball, and usually that guy needs to be able to score. But he doesn't demand the ball, he doesn't force turnovers, and he doesn't force the play. And in the most recent game against Michigan State, Brian is correct, Ervin didn't, I mean, he's been turning the ball over in the last few weeks badly. He had zero turnovers in this game. Played great defense, and he took one bad shot. And in the very good, the great Michigan teams, you had guys like, you don't remember this guy, Johnny Robb, back in the Green and Hubbard teams, who could score the ball but never demanded it. You had Raymond Britt, who was the best defender who ever played at Michigan, who could score the ball but never demanded it. And more recently, you had Glenn Robinson, who almost in his career didn't take a bad shot here. And so it's very important when I look at a basketball team to say, okay, does this team have the kind of synergy that can allow it to win? And when Ervin he can shoot the ball, and if he takes his shots, good open looks, he's great, but he's fine. But when he forces the action, when he forces the play, it tends to evaporate on him. And to me, that's the most important thing. In terms of, interestingly enough, I don't know, on the defensive rebounding end, we're actually number two in the conference. And if you look at all games, we're not great. And the Ohio State game was a debacle. But I got us, if you look at KenPom, I think we're number two in the conference in defensive rebounding.
Yeah, the Ohio State game was kind of an anomaly. But one of the things that Ohio State brings is Tristan Thompson, who's a legit 7-footer, yeah. who's one of the best rebounders at both ends in the country. And Michigan, I think, really struggled with him in particular.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah,
but, I mean, it was also the positioning, too, right? Like, the Ohio State guys were getting inside Michigan
guys.
They
were front in the post.
Yeah, so there's certain situations yeah. where you're putting yourself in a bad spot, especially if you're less athletic and less able to bang that guy all the way underneath the basket. So Moe's not thick enough, and Denal isn't athletic enough, so I'd like to see some Teske just to see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of inexplicable to me that they went through those terrible games in December and they really didn't play him at all. I mean, if you're not redshirting the guy, you need to see him on the court and get a feel for what he's going to be like, and they didn't do that. And they didn't really do that with Moe last year either, right? Like, so Moe had barely played most mm-hmm. of the season, and then late, it's like, okay, maybe this guy can play. And I'm like, dude, like, I, you know, time and again, these guys come on the court late in the season, and I'm like, they should have been playing earlier. And I think Teske will hopefully bear that out late
yeah.
this year.
Well, I think we may be at that point now where they just they play the young guys more, and what happens happens.
Yeah.
You know, if they have their struggles, they have their struggles, but it's not like you know, the minutes that you're using the minutes that you're using for them are being, you know, maximized
yeah.
when used by others. So you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Can they bottle it up and take it on the road to a venue that before the Blackman injury is like, there's no way They go down there.
Indiana's a shell of itself right now.
Right, but they're exactly.
Well,
but
Indiana's
now,
been up and down, too, even before the Blackman injury, right? I mean, they've had their great games.
Well, the Blackman injury doesn't help.
No.
OG Anunoby's out. Like they.
Right, and like, so now it looks like a winnable game.
Yeah,
of course.
I mean.
But remember, I mean, they still have guys that can take it to the basket, which is where this team struggles the most. So I don't feel comfortable about winning.
Oh, I certainly can.
I'm not really
either
saying that they're comfortable about it. But
right.
This is definitely
right.
Tractable.
But I didn't. When we were doing a couple of weeks ago, win loss. This was firmly in the loss department.
Sure.
And now, if they can take, they don't have to shoot 75% in the first half, right? Right.
Although I would recommend it.
Right.
Yeah,
it'd
that would
be awesome
fantastic
if they could. But the process that got them to that point. It's, you know, Izzo talked about, well, these guys just made their shots. Like, come on, dude, give me a break. they didn't just make their shots this time. It was the shots they got were really good looks, and it was because they did a much better job getting to the rim. And we talked about the stat yesterday. They scored 20 points in the paint in East Lansing for the game. They had 18 points in the paint in the first half against Michigan State here. And the action, the looks that came off of penetration created. I mean, they were really, really good looks, and they got high percentage looks from the perimeter as a result.
We have Mo in the high post on that early screen down to Mar, who just is wide open in the bucket. You have a back cut from, and that stuff was not happening at East Lansing. So obviously they went over the film and they were finding a lot of things where Michigan State was overplaying, and they fixed a bunch of stuff, which is good. Hopefully they can carry that over. Indiana now is a very bad defensive team. So
because they were good before.
Well, I mean, they're worse now. Mm. I mean, because Anunoby was probably their best defender.
Right.
Blackman was all right. And now they've got Bryant, and they really don't have any other size. So this could be a game for DJ Wilson.
All right. And we saw the last game, they were essentially without Blackman. I mean, we took like three shots, right?
Yeah.
And so they got very little production from him, and Michigan blew their doors off. And so we'll see. And I don't expect them to blow Indiana out, but this is one. If you're going to make the tournament, this is a game you got to get.
Well, I'm still worried that Yogi Ferrell's going to come out of the locker room somehow.
Who balled out last week. Did you see him against Portland? Man. Yogi Ferrell, he was there on a 10-day contract that got a 2-year deal.
I still don't believe that's Yogi Ferrell. I still believe that he's in the locker room.
Dude,
in Assembly Hall just waiting for Michigan.
I couldn't believe it. I watched that game. It was like, man, Yogi's about to get paid.
So does Michigan have any room for error in these last five games?
No.
I mean, well, they can lose some. Like, they need to get to 10-8 probably. So.
Well, now though,
so they can lose two of them. You think?
I thought this was before. This was before the loss to Ohio State, and before I saw Purdue go down to Maryland and win it. Maryland had this thing. Yeah, they're gonna be able to maybe get Purdue at home.
They shoot 65% from three. Yeah.
Okay, so Purdue has at least four guys shooting a career high in three point this year, which is propelling part of their success.
I mean, but that does happen. Like,
unless they got
much better as a 3-point shooter as his career goes on.
And
you know,
teams shoot high 3-point percentages against Michigan.
True, but it's
just
Purdue.
Case.
I mean, it could be. I think Purdue's a little overrated in my numbers and everyone's numbers.
They're not overrated in what's going to happen when their front court goes up against Michigan's front court.
Well,
like
that's clearly a problem.
You look at how Ohio State dominated the glass, and then you take these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can make Haas small because he's a wimp on the floor.
Dude,
he is so easy to take off his game.
I watched the game.
He is so easy to take out of his game if you just muscle him. The thing is that Michigan hasn't
proven. Who's going
to
muscle him?
That's the thing is Michigan hasn't proven that they
Mark
can do that.
You got to make him play defense. You take him away from the rim and make him play you on a perimeter.
I mean, that's going to be fine on the offensive end. I mean, you're going to see Mo go by him for a couple of dunks and hit some threes, and that'll be fine. I'm more worried about Caleb Swanigan, who's vacuuming up like 20 rebounds a game. And you know, I like DJ Wilson, but he's not a great rebounder, and you know, he's got the body of a small forward that's been stretched out a little bit. And Swanigan is emphatically a power forward.
Right, he is, and I just think with both of those guys, you got a quickness advantage on the perimeter. You try to get them in foul trouble, make them play defense. At the very least, if they're playing some defense, it's kind of maybe affecting them on the offensive end of the floor.
That's just
one of the two very difficult home games. You're facing the two best teams in the Big Ten at home.
They can get
here down the stretch.
Like Hap is not a good matchup for. I mean, Hap is a good matchup for Mo. Like he
and they can, play and they did play it. Wisconsin close.
Okay. Yeah, and then at the Troll Center, and they hit that 3-pointer at the end where it bounces off the rim twice. The
Troll Center, I've heard that one before.
You haven't?
I've not heard
the Troll. That is the before. That of all the games left for the home games, that's the one where they have to. Mo in particular, foul trouble is the one that it's the key of the game.
I've internalized that so much I didn't even know I said it. Like that's just what it's called in my mind now.
All right. It is 9:45 on a Thursday. Phone lines are wide open. Dennis, Phil, Beeline shouted you out unsolicited at his press conference this week. It's pretty funny.
Wait, what?
His post-game press conference.
I happened to listen to the show. Phil called in, right, just as I was pulling in the garage, thank God, and I'd shut off your radio.
We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. All right, so all the guys here have significant others. And so that means you better be on your game for Valentine's Day. Now, if you have put it off, like a lot of guys listening to this show, and I'm speaking to you, my brothers from other mothers out there, we are going to continue to try to help you out. But look, you got to help us help you. You got to take advantage of the opportunity when it's in front of you. That's what you have right now with Sherry's Berries, but this is a limited time sort of thing. Giant freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries right now, starting at just $19.99 plus shipping, or double the berries for just $10 more. You just need to use our code to take advantage of this deal, Sam and Ira. And again, these are berries that fit in the palm of your hand, not between two fingers. I mean, these are huge, that are dipped, huge berries that are dipped in white chocolate, milk chocolate, and dark chocolate, topped with chocolate chips, decorative swizzle, and chopped nuts. And again, it's the gift that gives back to you. There's no way she's going to eat all these berries herself. She's going to share with you, going to help you enjoy them as well. So hurry. This Valentine's Day gift is just it's right before you, and Valentine's Day is just days away. There's only one way to get Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99. Visit berries.com. That's berries.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Type in Sam and Ira again. Berries.com. Click on the mic. Sam, A-N-D, Ira in that order box. And again, order now because the deal going to go away very soon.
All right, so Sam, all morning long we've been getting tweets from our listeners at Michigan Insider on who your first sports love was, and we took all those entries and randomly grabbed two winners to each win a $50 gift coupon code to Sherry's Berries. So BJ Anderson, whose first love was BJ Armstrong. You talked about how the initials were the same. And then Big BA10, who is a big Gary Carter fan. They were the random names we selected. They have been contacted. Check your private messages. You have been selected as our winners, and you have your coupon code. So make sure you and take care of the special ladies and people in your lives with those coupon codes as well from Sherry's Berries.
All right, let's go to the phones and talk to Dennis in the OC. Dennis, what's up?
Hey, Sam, Iron, and fellas. A great show, of course, as always. So I think about process, which was referencing that earlier. And as we're getting ready to see the team go to Indiana and hopefully get a win down there, which would be wonderful for many reasons, I'm wondering about two things. The point Brian was making about seeing some of these players that should have been playing earlier than they have been in the season, process-wise, what do we think is involved in that? And then also with this team, it seems they have this Jekyll and Hyde aspect to it. They've had some great games and others where we're all scratching our heads saying, well, what's wrong here? And I'm just wondering what you guys think might be some of the factors that would lead to that.
Guys? Sure, Craig, let's start with you.
I don't know. I mean, in terms of Teske, I'm not sure, again, why they're not playing him. I mean, is the question why we're so Jekyll and Hyde-ish?
That was one of his questions, yes.
Yeah, and the answer is I don't know. I mean, as Brian pointed out, when we played at Michigan State, we were completely stagnant. We didn't move the ball. We still almost won the game. And this week, we moved the ball great and got open looks and made them and played phenomenally. I don't know. You tell me why this team is.
I mean, there's always the random variable of 3-point shooting, right? I mean, they went through a terrible 4-game stretch where everyone was hitting everything on them. That's right. Not completely absolves Michigan's defense by any means, but that did happen.
Yeah.
And then Indiana and Michigan State at Chrysler, they were on fire.
Well, and see, I think that Izzo is imp- I just think that that is not – that doesn't give enough attention to the looks they got. They didn't – it wasn't like at Michigan State they were, you know, missing a bunch of open threes and just missed them randomly. They were contested shots. They got some looks that they missed, some good looks that they missed, but by and large, they were jacking up contested threes.
Yep.
In this game, the difference was they got better looks, and they got better looks from three because they did a much better job getting downhill and collapsing their defense and getting good looks off of it. So if they can mimic that, I don't know that they can. If they can mimic that, though, that's a good recipe. And then if they can keep their bigs on the floor, that's another – that's another real key for
honestly,
them.
Like, that seems to – I think that is the biggest factor because, like, the drop-off behind DJ and the drop-off behind Mo are pretty steep. So if either of those guys or both those guys get in foul trouble, you're going to lose 5-10 points, and that could swing a game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's a point. I mean, at Michigan State, I think they both fouled out. And I think DJ and Mo both fouled out.
And Mo didn't have a foul in the first half. He picked up three in quick succession in the second half, but he stayed on the court for the bulk of the game, and he was able to play defense more aggressively because he hadn't actually picked up a foul yet. So, I mean, the home away swings and the refereeing are especially brutal for Michigan because remember that the second foul that Mo got against Michigan State where Michigan's bench just explodes because he's tracking the guy. He goes up vertically, and he still gets called, and he doesn't get that call at Chrysler. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when you got a big drop off between number one and number two, and number one is a little foul prone, it's a cause for big swings.
Hey, so in the past, Ira, we've heard John Beilein say Phil is a hater, right? Well, so they beat Michigan State. Beilein comes
Phil
in.
Phil is a hater.
Yeah, that was his thing from a few years ago. So we start the press conference, and that was it. That was probably we were doing an interview here on the show, and he just said something about Phil and said Phil's a hater. So I was at the press conference post game, and he saw me, and then he said this.
I happened to listen to the show. Phil called in, right, just as I was pulling in the garage, thank God, and I shut off your radio.
Phil, how you doing, man?
What's going on, fam?
How you doing today, Phil?
I'm all right. You know, I was going to call into something else, but, you know, but it's all good. I mean, look, you know, what, Michigan won by, was it 29 against State? I mean, that's great. We can have a parade down State Street. But, I mean, you know, when folks down here, you know, Georgia and Atlanta, you know, ask me about Michigan basketball, you know, I'm like, look, you know, you got an average coach consistently that recruit average players consistently, and you get average results. So, I mean, you know. We're going to barely make the tournament again, NIT bound mostly.
I'm great, but at least I'm grateful that people in Atlanta actually witnessed Michigan in a Final Four. So they know that Phil's not exact. They know that Phil's the wrong guy to ask about Michigan basketball.
You do realize Michigan played the championship game in Atlanta, Phil. Now,
Phil is a hater.
Look, that does not mean that they haven't been mediocre this year. They have been mediocre this year. And you call a spade a spade.
Well,
and hopefully. Hopefully they can find something here down the stretch. But come on, man. I mean, while you can be critical, aptly so this year of the performance, playing, coaching, they will take that. You can't totally discount the things that they've done here. Come on, man. You can't totally discount all the things.
You're not wasting your breath. He already hung up. He's not even on the hold. He doesn't listen again, so he's done.
Well, and we just lost, you know, half of our audience, right?
No, just Beilein hung just up Beilein? When Phil no. said
oh,
he was
Oh, come on.
Hung.
You don't think other people, like, turn the car off when Phil calls in?
I'm terrified that Beilein listens to this show.
It's a train wreck when he calls in so people can't turn away.
You didn't
away.
Know Beilein listens?
Oh, it's bad, man. I got to think of all the things I said. Like, what's
you don't terrible? Know. You don't realize people listen when you say
no, I didn't. It's terrible.
Brian, just in case you weren't sure, every car comes with a radio, and most people that are in those cars turn those radios on.
My car just has like a rock grinder. I don't know what you guys have in your cars.
Hey, man, you get used to it and realizing that, yes, people actually do listen quite intently, and they remember.
Intently.
Yeah. They
only
remember.
When I say something bad. Never when I say something good, nobody's ever come up to me and been like, hey, remember that good thing you said about
yeah, but
person?
Brian, remember, go up to coach and say, what's your most vivid memory of insert venue here? And their first memory is going to be a loss.
Well,
people remember the negative stuff first.
No,
here's the thing with Phil. I think, look, criticism comes with the job, right?
Sure.
What makes Phil different is all he does is criticize. He's never given Beilein an ounce of praise. And Coach B has deserved it. Now, that doesn't absolve you of any blame when things don't go well. Doesn't mean that it's never okay to criticize. It just means, come on, man, there are two sides to the coin. And he only sees one side, unfortunately. So,
you know, the other thing is, the only really good poll or the only really good evaluation out there, in my opinion, aside from Ed stuff, and I'm not sure where Ed is at right now with Michigan basketball exactly, but it's KenPom, and we're sitting number 30 in his poll. So that's not mediocre. I mean, it's been a disappointing and frustrating season in many respects, but sitting number 30 in KenPom means you played okay.
Yeah, and I've been looking at what the markets think of Michigan, and they're actually the third-ranked Big Ten team. By some of my calculations.
Wow.
I think that's partially because they got a little bump because of the OB injury during Indiana. Wow. And I weigh recent things more. But
yes, it does.
Right. Yep. Yes, it does.
Coming up next, Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor Accumulist.
Better than